If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the 12th Man Rising Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. Here's your hosts, Lee Vowell and Todd Vandenberg.
Must be on because you got staticky. That's always a good, it's like the people are listening and they're just like, it's like, oh, it's, I guess they've started. So we'll pick up chapter one. Took us all of that time to get to chapter one. The house stood on a slight rise just on the edge of the village. It stood on its own and looked over a broad spread of West Country farmland. Not a remarkable house by any means. It was about 30 years old, squattish, squarish, made of brick, and had four windows set in front of a size and proportion, which more or less exactly filled to please the eye. The only person for whom the house was in any way special was Arthur Dent. That reminds me. There's a new show on BritBox called The Responder with Martin Freeman. I have no idea why that reminds me.
With Arthur Dent.
Yeah.
Because Martin Freeman plays Arthur Dent in the finest version of...
Of Hitchhikers? Yeah. Is Martin Freeman in one of the Hitchhikers?
Yeah. Huh. He's Arthur Dent.
Oh, that's weird. I did not know that. That's,
really?
That must have been way back in my subconscious.
That's why it reminded you of the Martin Freeman thing.
Because I guess
Arthur Dent.
Really?
I think it was the BBC series, not the first BBC series, which is insane, which obviously it would be insane, but it's like way off the rails. It's not quite like Monty Python had done it, but it's close. It's so bizarre.
That'd be kind of funny.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, this Arthur Dent guy, he had lived in for about 3 years ever since he had moved out of London because it made him nervous.
He died after 3 years? That makes me sad.
Sadly, yeah. Nervous and irritable. He was about 30 as well, tall, dark-haired, and never quite at ease with himself. The thing that used to worry him most was the fact that people always used to ask him what he was looking so worried about. He worked in local radio, sounds like us, which he always used to tell his friends was a lot more interesting than they probably thought. It was, too. Most of his friends worked in podcasting. No, advertising. No,
really local.
Local podcast.
This is local radio as it can get, because like we're the only ones who listen. Other than all the people in Iceland who love us.
We had well over 3 listens last show.
Sweet.
Yeah. One of those was me. Maybe 2. 2 of them were me. So somebody else listened. That's good.
Can't imagine why.
Anyway, we are.
Why? I can't imagine why.
I can't. Probably mental instability. But we are here to talk Seattle Seahawks football, which we talk about every week here at the podcast. I'm Lee. I can't keep doing this. I'm Lee, and that's Todd. Todd, how are you today?
I was going to do the whole show in a voice because I told Sony yesterday, Sony being my wife. Hi, Sony. If you're listening, she doesn't listen because she doesn't.
Why would she?
Yeah, seriously, she doesn't engage in tomfoolery with riffraff.
If it's anything like me, I'm like, here, listen to this part. It's like, oh, okay, that's a listen because I forced people to listen. But...
And I don't know what voice I was going to do, so it doesn't matter. I guess I'm stuck with my own. That's sad. I am. I'm still fighting COVID. I think this is like the 18th.
It's been a while. Yeah, it's been a while. Been a lot.
Yeah. This is closer, rounding out my second week of it, and it's like so fun. And as I was telling you in pre-pro, hi Ted. Mike, I don't think I've said that for a month. I'm sorry, Ted. Not that Ted listens either, because, again, he does not engage with tomfoolery.
I'm going to see Ted at the end of the month.
Are you really?
I am.
Our Ted or Ted Turner?
Yeah.
Our Ted, as if we own him, which is
Is Ted
racist.
Turner still alive? He died, right?
You can still see him.
Can't? We can't?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
I mean, I don't know if I could see him. He's got one of those little bells. Like, he's like, oh, I'm not really dead. Ding, ding, ding.
I'm definitely getting one of those, man.
I'm just getting a straw. So
for something to drink or breathing?
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense.
No, yeah, anyway. Yeah, I'll see Ted at the end of the month.
That's awesome. Is Ted touring the devastation of the southeastern United States? Are you going up to the cultural center of the world, Queens?
That reminds me, I ever since I had that fiasco with the legal issue in Buncombe County, Asheville, nobody's returning my calls now. I don't get it. So,
that's a terrible thing to say, and it's a worse thing to laugh at.
It's untrue.
Yeah.
No, we're going to New York City. We're actually going to Hoboken in New York City.
Oh,
we're staying in the Hoboken where you can see New York City, and then we're going in New York City.
So you're going to the Frank Sinatra Museum, which does not exist in Hoboken.
Which does not exist, yes. But Ted doesn't live in New York City anyway.
No, he doesn't.
I'm not sure. There's a big My Chemical Romance museum, but anyway, so...
It's a gutted factory, is what it is.
Be kind of cool. There's an emo museum. That'd be pretty cool. Hoping to see Ted. He said he was leaving the country the next week because of the election. And I don't think he was joking. Like, he's actually taking a trip with his wife.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. Who knew people could go overseas?
I didn't know that. I didn't go overseas. I'm out of the country, but I didn't go overseas.
You have been overseas. You've been to España.
I went over a lake.
And Esportugal.
I've been to España. I've been to Esportugal. I've been to Esprague, which always cracks me up. I told you this before, but this always cracked me up when people say Prague is one of the most beautiful cities in the world. When I was there, because I'm ancient, this was when Prague was still part of Czechoslovakia. Yes, it used to be one country. Because they were forced to be one country, and now they're two countries. And it was gray and dingy, and it looked like it hadn't been cleaned. And, you know, it looked like the exterior of a hoarder's house, because it was gray and dingy, and it was just like, this is... Back then, no one even said it was, like, one of the most beautiful cities in the world. So I think what happened was, once they threw off the yoke of Mr. Khrushchev, they decided, hey, you know what? We can wash this place. And now look, all those vibrant colors came out. It's like
Why
they washed the
there?
Whole city in time. Back when I was in the Air Force. Like I said, ancient history.
I mean, so did you have to go there or did you visit on your own?
No, I had to go there. And I mean, it wasn't like, oh, it was a horrible thing. It was just like,
wait, were you part of the bombings with Israel and Lebanon this week?
I was not, and I was told that there was going to be no fact-checking on this podcast, so...
My sister, who's a staunch Republican, my daughter had posted on Facebook about the fact-checking thing, and my sister responded by saying, oh, they should have fact-checked both of them. And my first thought was, well, my daughter said they did. Exactly. And my second thought was... Only one of them really has to be fact-checked. to a certain degree.
And only one of them complained about it. And this is what kills me. And we'll eventually talk about the Seahawks. But somehow there's still a lot of undecided voters. I understand.
Even among Seahawks. True. I'm assuming. We're making that up.
I understand that there's some people who are going to vote for Trump no matter what. Because they just are. Right? And there's no talking to them, sadly. But when J.D. Vance literally said, I'm going to say whatever it takes, right?
Yeah.
He literally said, I'm going to lie. At that point, it's over.
This guy literally
said, I'm going to say whatever it takes to convince you to vote for Donald Trump. It's like, okay, he's admitting he's lying. So why do you listen to any of his... grandiose plans and the concept of the plan that the guy had 10 years later. He literally told you he's going to lie. Literally said
that. That's how far we've come, though, because now they can spin it like, oh, he's not really lying, because that's how far, how deep we've gone with this. It's ridiculous.
I do not understand how someone can hear that statement and not connect it. It's not connecting the dots. The dot is right there in your face. He literally said he's going to lie. Why are you listening to him? Why do you trust these frickin' people? There's nothing that they've done in the past.
It's like, did you see any of Saturday Night Live this past week?
I did. I didn't watch the debate because, to me, there was no point, because I knew he's going to lie, because he told me he's going to lie. So why am I going to listen to him?
Yeah. Well, did you how much of Saturday Night Live did you see? Did you see the Weekend Update?
I saw part of the Weekend Update. I saw the opening and then turned it off, and I saw a little bit of the Weekend Update.
Did you see the part about Hitler?
I did not.
So this had like nothing. They just kind of went. It was Colin Jost.
Do it in German.
Well, no. That's the key. So they Colin Jost was doing. He's like, yeah, some TikTok users have gotten in trouble recently because they have been translating Hitler into English. And then it's like, well, we have a clip of it now, and it shows Hitler, like the actual Hitler, doing a speech, and all you hear him say is, "And they're eating the dogs, and they're eating the cats."
Oh, I did see that. Yeah.
Which reminds me, I feel.
Which honestly, literally, I would not be a bit surprised. Hitler did say something along those lines.
I mean, seriously,
he did.
I honestly feel, as a human being, all joking aside, horrible for these Haitian refugees that have legally come to this country, and then. Yeah. And Trump came out, 2 days ago, saying, yeah, I would work to make sure they were, you know, forced out of the country. They haven't done anything. Like, they're complete. How would you imagine how they must feel, like, fleeing Haiti and ending up and thinking, okay, we've got this new start. We're away from Haiti. We've got this new start in this new country. And then we've run into this. Oh, man, that is – I feel so bad for those people.
Vance tried to explain how they're illegal aliens, even though they aren't, because he said that because Harris illegally extended this act that Congress passed. It's like, oh, okay, so wait a minute. It's a law.
It's a law
that Congress passed, and that Trump's stacked Supreme Court chose not to overturn. So it's law. So by definition, Mr. Senator, who I don't know if it's true, but and I usually fact check things I just read on the internet, even especially for ones that support the liberal position, because to me it's no better if we go out and spout off some stuff that's not true than if MAGA types do, right? But this one meme said that, pardon me, that Vance had missed the last 45 votes in the Senate, which that seems pretty extreme. And I know he's campaigning, but I doubt that he's missed 45 votes. But there's got to be a grain of truth to there, right? So he's missed several votes. Also said that he has not had a single bill that he's brought up passed, which means, and that I'd have no problem believing, because he actually hadn't been in the Senate for very long, which, again, they go back to, they talk about Harris is unqualified. By the way, this is a Seahawks podcast. We'll get to it. Speaking of qualified people, I think Geno Smith is qualified.
We'll get to that.
And saying that Harris is not qualified. It's like, dude, you've been a senator for like a year and a half. And before that, you were what? A tech bro who wrote a bestseller, which was supposedly a biography, but actually is at least half fiction. Like,
yeah,
this guy is from Appalachia. Like, I'm from, I don't know, Lithuania.
Yeah, like, exactly.
He grew up in Ohio. Like, technically, you know, if you really extend the borders of Appalachia, that section of Ohio is in Appalachia, but he's not from Appalachia or Appalachia. I was like, come on, dude. Like, what the hell? And again, he literally said, I am going to lie no matter how many times it takes to get it elected. Why are you listening to a thing this guy says?
You know what the shame?
Scumbag.
The shame of it, but the shame of it is that was more of a cordial debate. I mean, they shook hands at the end. It was
Oh,
we don't have to like J.D. Vance, and we don't, right? But it's like you and I, not the greater we, but you and I. But it's still like at least there's some semblance of humanity there. It's not like what we've. I mean, I was.
Well, Vance is just a bald opportunist. That's all he is. I mean, he literally compared Trump to Hitler a few years ago.
Yeah, of course he did.
And this is his ticket to the big time, so he's taking it. He doesn't give a crap, like most Republicans. Sadly. Well,
exactly. And I was driving in the car today and listening to Pod Save America, which is a fantastic podcast if you haven't listened to it. But I just kept and they're very liberal. They're definitely liberal on that show. But I just kept thinking, man, I'm not a Republican, but I missed they were talking about like, oh, you know, in 8 years, you know, things. I was like, 12 years ago, the world was different because we didn't have Trump. At least if I wasn't going to vote Republican, but at least it was normal. I mean, it was like there is no Republican Party now. I'm sorry. There is not.
No, there isn't. All it is the Trump Party. Yeah. You know, Liz Cheney was cast out, right? I mean, she actually appeared at a Harris rally, which
and said she's going to vote for Harris.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't like Liz Cheney's politics at all.
I don't either. And she'll admit to that. I've never voted for a Democrat before. I'll probably never vote for another Democrat ever again, but I'm backing Harris. But yeah, I her dad was abominable. And even then, you think about how bad we thought Dick Cheney was when Bush was elected. Now it's like Dick Cheney doesn't seem that bad.
Dick Cheney used to be the embodiment of evil to anyone on the left side of the political spectrum. And now he's on the right side because at his core, he actually believes he has a very skewed view of it, granted, but he actually believes in the Constitution. And Trump doesn't.
Yes. And that's what this has nothing to do with you. And we will talk to Yawks, I promise. We're 16 minutes and we're having talks to Yawks.
Geno Smith, thank you.
But the issue is, it's like, when we were both young, decades ago, you could still have left and right. I mean, but there was at least some compromise on each. But there was never. Could you imagine someone then 40, 50 years ago saying, "Oh, that's not my president," from a Republican? I mean, you could see a liberal. Didn't happen, but that would be more something in the liberals and you know, a Republican would be like, oh no, that's we voted it. And now it's like, how much has this country gone to shit? And when we have conservatives saying he's not my president, if Trump gets elected, guess what? He's my president. I don't want him to be, but he is.
Yeah,
that's not the country we should be.
he'll be your emperor. Shortly
he will be, but it's not like I would ever say he's not my president. My president's he got elected. He's the president. It's just, we've changed so much.
It is. I mean, like you said, it's like people used to like revile Dick Cheney. Now he's being revered for standing up against Trump. That's how crazy politics in the U.S. have gotten. And living in Canada, the view from again, it's not overseas, people who failed geography in second grade.
It's across the river.
Yeah, it's over river.
Which is
in a few instances. So
not really.
The view, at least in Canada, is like, what the hell is going on? Because obviously Canada is very much affected by anything that happens in the U.S., more so than any other country other than Mexico, because like right there on the border. So they're kind of gobsmacked by all this.
Well, let's talk Seahawks. So I heard I was listening to Seattle Sports, Mike Salk and Brock. Brock wasn't on today, but he's not on Fridays because he has another job calling football games. But they had callers. Yeah, they had callers call in, which they do on Fridays. And one of the callers said that Geno Smith he's just only really a backup. And I thought
I knew that was coming, but
because it's still the mindset of a lot of people, right? And I thought, first of all, if I'm Geno Smith, how in this first half, especially before It's weird. Kenneth Walker only seems to run in the second half. I don't think it's his fault. I think the way they're scheming is incorrect. He should be able to run in the first half because that guy's a freak, which he proved in the second half. Like, I mean, some of those runs were just like, this guy's a top five back in the NFL.
Yeah.
But
yes,
you watch Jared Goff against the very weakened Seahawks defense because of all the injuries. But you watch Jared Goff throw. He was 18 of 18. He was good. He's a good quarterback. But he wasn't under pressure. He stood back there and threw the – and you watch Geno time and again move around in the pocket trying to create space. And then, I mean, that one dart he threw to – was it JSN where he kind of eluded and then threw on a dime, a rope, like 15 yards? Anybody watching Jared Goff was 18 of 18 for – 99% of that game, Geno Smith was still the better quarterback. He was freakishly good, and he's been that way for two plus years for the most part, right? He's had some bad games, but
everybody does. Jared Goff has had bad game earlier this season. I mean,
it just it aggravates me so much that people are still like, well, they need a quarterback. They don't need a quarterback. Geno Smith can win playoff game. He was fine in the playoff game he did play against the 49ers. He was fine. The team, they just weren't as good as San Francisco. And they're still probably not as good as San Francisco. But, well, I mean, we'll find out a lot more
play San Francisco. Next week.
Hopefully they'll get a bunch of defensive players back, and then we'll really see. I mean, what we saw against the Lions was just – that was a chill of the defense, honestly. Yeah. But it just aggravates me so much that people still see Geno – there's literally, it's kind of like Trump, right? It's like whatever he says is true. There's no changing their minds as far as Geno Smith is not a good quarterback. That's just factually incorrect.
This is according to Pro Football Focus, subscription required. And I don't trust their stats to be entirely correct, mainly because often they don't agree with virtually every other source, right? For the Detroit game, they recorded one sack by the Seahawks. One sack by
Detroit.
By Detroit. Unless it's that they are just saying those are team sacks, and that might be this. Because I'm looking at blocking grades, and they're saying only one Seahawk gave up a sack. So maybe that's what it is. Maybe those were
the other two. Well, he was only sacked because he was
team sacks.
Moving around in the pocket. So because he was forced to move around in the pocket.
But there still has to be a more than a grain of truth, right? So Geno was pressured, according to Pro Football Focus, 27 times in that game. 27 pressures. Now, again, that might be a little off, but we know he's got a lot of pressure. Jared Goff, 6 pressures.
Yeah.
And you watch it.
And
game,
one of those
was
garbage time with Tremont Jones.
And okay, it might be a little bit off, but 4-1, at least 3-1, definitely. It's like
he was under pressure every time he went back to throw. The only reason he was sacked once
literally,
is because Geno Smith.
Literally half of his passing attempts he was under pressure. So exactly, tell me what backup quarterback would come out with a game like that. It's like, how are you so stupid? I just don't understand this concept. Oh, the problem is Geno. And it's like, Geno doesn't play defense. Geno didn't give up 42 points.
And Geno's not the quarterback, they don't score 29 points.
Oh, Jesus. What do they score? Maybe.
It's 42-14, maybe.
It's not worse. I was going to say maybe they score a couple touchdowns because I particularly think that Sam Howell is going to be good if he gets a chance, and hopefully he doesn't get the chance this year because that means Geno's out and Geno's the better quarterback. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, I mean
number of pressure, that was ridiculous. It was an amazing good game.
Yeah, he leads the league in passing yards, but which always is a little bit skewed, right? Because because he also leads the league in attempts and completions, which is key because he's still completing 72% of his passes. This is after leading the league in completion percentage 2 years ago and then game-winning drive and then NFC and touchdown passes and 2 years ago and then game-winning drives, leading the league in game-winning drives and fourth quarter comebacks last year.
And he's a backup, all right. My question is, if he's a backup, who's your starter?
Well, who's having a young Joe Montana.
And he ain't playing.
Right.
There is no Joe Montana. You know, it's just like, stop with this bullshit. The only problem the Seahawks had last week was injuries. That's it.
Yeah, or the...
Like you said, I mean...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, he wrote the articles, like, you know, the mantra that Mike McDonald has is the next man up. It's like, everybody has that mantra, basically, right? It's like, but there's a limit to that. That's the reason they're the next man.
Yeah, you can't beat you or I in the game and be like, oh, they're next man up. It's like,
If they were better, they'd be starting. We know they are not as good. That's why they're the next man instead of the first guy up. Yeah. I mean, kind of obvious, right?
I mean,
of course he has to say that, and he should believe that.
Yeah, Derek Hall played well. I mean, decently well. Draymond Jones did not play well. He had the sack, but it was garbage time. I mean, it didn't matter, right? I mean, because that was the safety. Derek Hall had the one sack because he literally reached out an arm and pulled Goff to the ground.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, there was no, even Witherspoon has not had the best year. He's had more penalties than anything else. It seems like, Woolen started off well, but I'm not sure. Julian Love. I mean, just think about all the talent that was missing. It's a different game. I'm not saying the Lions are a good team. I'm not saying they don't win, but it's a different game if you have Leonard Williams.
Exactly.
And Nwusu and Boye Mafe and Julian Love.
Lions might have still won, but it would have been like 31-29 maybe.
Yeah.
And that's if they won. Yep. So you can't lose almost literally half of your defense and then expect them to perform the same.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, and I don't know. And then you think if DK doesn't fumble, no offense to DK, he was just trying. I saw, you know, I wrote an article during the game, but it's just people at 12s trashing DK. I'm like, the guy he didn't do anything boneheaded. He was just trying to get extra yards. And actually, if it wasn't a great play by Campbell for the Lions, he doesn't fumble.
And that's the thing. It wasn't a DK mistake. It was a great play by Campbell. That's one guy that everyone was thinking is like, oh, maybe if we can get Campbell, that'd be pretty cool because that guy's a player, man.
Hey, reminded me of Bobby Wagner in that game. He did Bobby Wagner type things.
Yeah, he did. He's an excellent player.
And then we had the officiating was horrible. So if you have for two things on DK, not DK did wrong, but you had the 2-point conversion where he caught the ball. Yeah, clearly caught the ball. And then I don't know what the official was looking at. It's pass interference and would have set him up on the one, and that they might have scored a touchdown then. The Lions were the better team because the Seahawks were so diminished defensively, but the game could have been different if Metcalf doesn't fumble and those two things are called. Because they didn't, on the touchdown or on the pass interference, he got tackled. And it was fun because DK was like, He argued a little bit with the referee, but he wasn't like over the top because he had to feel so defeated, just like Geno had to feel defeated when like, man, I'm getting my team points and then I'm working my ass off literally to move around in the pocket and hit receivers and drive my team downfield. And then the Lions have one play and it's a 70-yard touchdown. It's like, GD.
Yeah.
I mean, the offense had to be so feeling defeated in that game.
Yeah, the officiating, I mean, how often can we say the officiating is good? That's unfortunately that's rare, right? But we talked about it during the game. It was like the Lions fans were booing on one of the calls, right? On the Hall tackle or sack rather.
They actually played Philadelphia in that game actually.
I think they did, and they're booing. And the official literally explained the rule when he announced the penalty. There is no horse collar within the pocket, and they're booing anyway. Even after he said that, it's like, that's the rule, stupid.
It is a weird rule, but even in that situation, it's like that's why the rule exists, I guess.
Yeah, it's like that's the rule, dude.
Like, and he didn't pull him down. He just reached out. I mean, the strength of Derek Hall to be able to do that.
Yeah. Right.
But just, I mean, if they do.
He had a good game.
As strange as it sounds, and he's so much better than he was last year. But as strange as it sounds, watching what the Lions did, I mean, 42 points and 50 yards from, or 50 plays from scrimmage, which is only the sixth time, right, in NFL history that's ever happened, that kind of efficiency. And the Seahawks having 38 first down. I mean, it was such a ridiculous game. And there's literally nothing Geno could have done. He threw the interception at the end because he had to throw it up. Like, I'm hoping something happens. And that hurts his quarterback rating, even though it's not really fair. I mean, he's got four interceptions. Right. Two of them are not his fault. It's been a weird year. But as bad as the defense looked against the Lions and how many rushing yards they gave up against the Patriots, if they can somehow, and Murphy's going to be out for a while, it seems like, but if they can get Williams and Owusu back and Mafe and just the defense could be really good. I mean,
for me, Williams is the key.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Williams 100%. Is more than, and Nwosu, like you said, he hasn't played in, it's going on almost a full season now at this point, right?
Yep.
And he'll make a big difference because, again, he plays the run really well, not just pressures. And same as Mafe. Mafe, he plays the run very well in addition to being excellent against the pass. They get both of those guys back. That's awesome. But Williams keys the whole defense. I mean, that was such a huge deal to pick up Williams. And, you know, and sometimes it's like, oh, you know, we got the answer like we thought with Draymond Jones, and he's not been. He's played much better overall. He started playing better even towards the end of last year when they finally thought, oh, let's move him outside because, you know, that's where he should have been the whole time.
And maybe that was his issue against the Lions because he did have to play kind of more on the inside because they didn't have anybody else.
Yeah, for sure. But Williams is the key to everything, man. As good as – and Witherspoon, I think he'll – shit, I know he'll bounce back. I mean, he's not had a bad season. He just hadn't had a spectacular season, you know. And it's like he's kind of going through at a – not to the same extent, but he's kind of going through what Reek went through last year. Exactly. Like, spectacular rookie season, then the second season comes back. And the injuries kind of fed into that, and we know, and it's like – and he was kind of, well, he was not kind of, he was hesitant, right? And it's like, that's gone. Thankfully, he's back to the way he played in his rookie season. And I think Spoon will come around too. But Williams is the key. And once he's back, because he controls that line of scrimmage as much as anybody has in Hawks history. I mean, this dude is excellent. Absolutely excellent. And everyone else just feeds off him. I mean, it's like the game is a hell of a lot easier when you've got an all-pro. Whether he makes that or not, he is.
Yeah.
And it's like the game's a hell, as we saw. It's like you're missing so many key pieces. It's like that next man up. Next man up works if you're the only next man up. But when you're one of six next man up, what are you supposed to do? And this is one of the reasons that I love McDonald, and Pete Carroll was exactly the same in this. It's like McDonald says, oh, it's like I looked at the film. Every mistake's on me. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
He takes the blame for everything. He's not saying, oh, Travis Gibson should have played better. Travis Gibson should have played better. Kevon Wallace especially should have played
Gibson
better.
Gibson showed great speed on that pass to Goff. I mean, he was so fast. It looked like he had his legs tied together.
Oh my God.
That was embarrassing. I mean, if that had been Mafe, he might have gotten the ball. The ball might have been knocked away. But it was just like, it was like Herman Munster was, I got to get this. And it's like, this guy's supposed to be an edge rusher, which is, you know, of course they.
And if any Lions fan has wandered onto this podcast somehow, which would be weird because health 12s don't, but not to take credit away from the Lions, that was a brilliant game plan. They played extremely well. It's not, oh, they only won because it's like we were missing. It's like they only scored so many points.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like you said, it's like they probably there's a very good chance they would have won the game if the Hawks defense had been at full strength. They played really, really Goff.
Yeah, they played almost. In fact, sure. In the second half, they only stopped themselves when they decided to run the ball three straight times, which was weird.
Yeah.
They could have kept throwing and moving around. They would have 49 points. I mean, they did what they needed to do. They played.
Yeah, they played really well, and they were a really good team. I mean, they made the conference championship last year, and I don't see any reason they won't make it this year. Hopefully, they're facing the Seahawks in that conference championship. That would be pretty cool.
Who did they lose to?
There's a good chance.
Lions lose to? Can't even remember now.
The losers of the Super Bowl, of course. Your San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, that's right. They lost to the 49ers. That's weird because the 49ers they've kind of had a weird season so far, right? They're 2-2, but they looked great against New England. Better than Seattle did.
Yeah. I think the thing is the Niners know their identity, right? Even when they've got talk about injuries, they've had massive injuries. Not as many as the Hawks had against the Lions, but it's like you're missing McCaffrey. That's huge, right? Obviously. Yeah. But they know who they are. The Hawks are still figuring that out, right? Because new defensive scheme, new offensive scheme, new personnel. I think they're doing a good job of identifying what Seahawks football is now. And again, if they'd been held, we saw it basically against Miami, and we saw it on offense against the Lions. Defense, we didn't, but we know why. It's like they're figuring out who they are and what their style of football is.
I think they'll be fine. I do too. Ryan Grubb has done a good job. I still feel like there's too much inconsistency as far as the running, because both games that Walker has played. How many yards rushing does he have in the second half? He's got like, 160 yards combined. And then in the first half,
74 in the second half, I think.
Well, no, I mean, first week he had 80 yards and the second week.
Oh yeah.
80 yards. So it's like 160 yards combined in the second halves of games. But in the first half, he has 30 yards. I mean, there's too much inconsistency. It's not like Kenneth Walker is suddenly like, oh, I'm much better.
He had 6 yards in the first half against the Lions.
Yeah, he had nothing.
And it's really frustrating because it's like in the first half, Grubb is going by like old playbooks. Like, oh, we don't want to run the ball too much, even though we have one of the best running backs in the league. And I'm like, you know, because we talked about that and I wrote a little bit about it one of the few times I've written anything this week. But when it's like, okay, what's going on with Walker? Why is he out? Is he hurt? And you said, no, I think it's just a Charbonnet series. And it was clearly because Charbonnet, and I don't mean like a series of downs, like the entire series Charbonnet played.
Yeah.
It's like, and I'm all for substituting, right? We don't want, you know, the Sean Alexander thing. Oh, we want to run him 300 times. And it's like, no, we don't want to kill the guy, right? We want him to be able to play next year. But like, dude, you cannot keep your best player, one of the best guys in his position on the bench for an entire series. Yeah. What are
when
you
he's
doing?
Red hot in the second half, too. Yeah, I mean, the three touchdowns he had, the one touchdown it was just freakish, right? The cut that he makes. Right. I mean, only
and
so
Charbonnet's good. I'm not knocking Charbonnet, but Charbonnet is not the same. He's not Walker. He's not the same kind of player to begin with.
No,
not at all. He can't make those plays, and that's not a knock on him. He does some things that Walker can't do. Not many, but you know, he's good in pass protection. He's good out of the backfield as a receiver. Walker is too, but I think Charbonnet's a little better both. Charbonnet's a little bit more of a power back, and again, not saying that Walker is a finesse guy. He's not, but Charbonnet just cannot make those cuts. And that's not a knock.
I mean, because most running backs can.
Exactly. How many running backs can? Maybe there's five or six other guys in the league who can do that.
I mean, how many running backs can catch the ball, get tackled, roll over the defensive player twice, and get back up? I mean, that's just freakish athleticism.
Such a sick play. That was an awareness. I was just like, to realize, is like, yeah, my knees haven't touched. Yeah, my knees still haven't touched.
Yeah,
I'm going to get up and run.
Partly that was it, right? He was aware. But
and
just
that was a
to
great
be able to
play
flexibility,
by the defender.
Yeah, it was
great play by the defenders. Like he tackled him. They realized, oh man, I didn't get him down. I'm gonna roll him again to get him down, and he still didn't get him down. Like props to the I can't remember who the defender was, but it's like the guy did his
Ronnie
job,
Lott.
Man. He tackled. I'm sorry, but I love Walker, but Ronnie Lott, like Mr. Walker would be in concussion protocol if Ronnie Lott had mentioned it. And I know that's blasphemy for a 12 to say that, but it's like, come on, man, it's Ronnie Lott.
Yeah. So anyway, the Giants will not have Malik Nabers this week. He's out with a concussion, going through That's concussion protocol. Yeah,
hopefully he'll be okay.
Well, I think they were hoping he would come back, but he just didn't. Didn't progress as quickly as the concussion rules.
I'm glad they're looking out for him. I mean, seriously, it's like I would rather play him.
Same thing,
because like we've always said, you want to play the best players, right?
Yeah,
but.
But yeah, he's gotten at least 12 targets a game for the last three games, and he's what, first in the league in receptions and targets, and second in the league in receiving yards. I mean, he's a huge part of their offense, and he helps the rest of the receivers.
Next be man up.
Yeah, but there's no next man like Nabers, right?
Right.
So Seattle should be facing a diminished Giants, and Daniel Jones is not going to quarterback, but. They should be facing a diminished Giants offense. The Giants have a really good defensive line, but not so good secondary. So if they can give, if the interior of the Seahawks line can give Geno time to throw, I think they need to work the outside a lot more in this game. I think they need to run Walker, forget the inside runs as much. Get Walker in one-on-one coverage. He has to have a huge game. Because the receivers are going to be able to do whatever they do, but Geno has to have time, but you can give Geno time if the running game or the running back is a threat to do something. Yeah. So I think this
exactly.
Yeah. Walker is a huge key to this game, but there's no reason at Lumen Field. The only question I have about this game is any hint of a player like Nwosu or Mafe, who might be able to play in this game, if they hold him out just because, and that injury report should come out as we're recording, like an hour or whatever. But if they hold him out because the 49ers game, which is more important, is just 4 days away. It's like, okay, well, we might. If we had another game next Sunday, maybe we'd go ahead and play him, but we're not sure about how well he'll play this game compared to how his recovery time will be for 4 days from now.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because I thought about this pre-podcast. Hi, Ted. And I was thinking, it's like how much of the injury situation going into the Lions game was that? How much of it was caution? I mean, I kind of think of, as far as the Lions game goes, like I think probably there wasn't anybody who really could go. I mean, if it was like the playoffs, it was like, okay, maybe one or two of those guys could have gone in, but because no one's going to win every single game during the season and win the Super Bowl other than the Miami Dolphins, and this is not going to happen again. So you know you're going to lose some games. You're going into a road game against a really good team, against a team that's really motivated, and you know you're going to be missing some of your players. So I wonder if like they were thinking that same thing is like, okay. And not that you're ever going to like willingly take it out.
Knowing that even if they lost, they'd still have the lead in the division.
But I do wonder, is like, would they err on the side of caution? And is that the right thing to do? I mean, do you really want to sit back and realize, okay, we're reducing our chances to go to 4-1, but by doing that, we're maximizing our chances to beat the one team in our division we have to beat. And if they do that, they'll still have a lead.
Can you beat the Giants the Giants with the same kind of defense they had against the Lions, because the Giants don't have the offense of the Lions, and then just trust Geno?
It's really risky.
But if you think there's any, even if you get a couple of those players, say Mafe comes back and.
No, if you get a couple of them back, you're golden. And of course, the Giants, it's the NFL. The Giants could come out and beat them 41-10. I mean, that's it. We know because this has happened in the NFL already, right?
Special teams, you know, it could be anything. It could be a punt return or whatever.
Yeah, but if they get a couple, if they get two of the six guys that were out, right, counting Love, who went out during the first half, I their chances are much better than if they are without all six. I think they still could beat the Giants. I mean, they can put up 29 points against the Lions. They can put up 29 against the Giants. And they're not going to give up 42 to the Giants because the Giants don't, especially with neighbors out. So as a coach, it's like, I wouldn't keep all of them out, but I would put in at least two. If all six are perfectly fine, you put them all in, of course. But if, say, four of them are still pretty dinged up and it's like, oh, you know, that extra 4 days, because, again, the Niners game is on Thursday, that extra 4 days could really benefit them. I think I would roll the dice and do that.
Yeah, I think so, too, especially with...
Not for all six of them, but for if I can get a couple. And it doesn't matter which two, honestly, in that group is like, I don't care. I'll take any of those two to come back.
Yeah.
Because even though I think Leonard Williams is the most important, those are all big pieces of their defense. Like, if I get two of those guys back, they're like, I'm fine. And obviously, if they get all six, it's like, yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Three games in 11 days is too much. Period.
11 games in 3 days would be a lot.
Yeah.
That's a crazy scheduling thing. They shouldn't do that.
The Mets.
Yeah, unless you're the Mets. Yeah.
That's crazy. And it shouldn't happen. But at least if it did happen, at least it happened now instead of like week 12 when the teams are tired. But
agreed.
I mean, it's
especially when you have a schedule that includes a bye week. You've got a bye week. Well, why did this happen? And it's not like, oh, poor Seahawks. It's like, they're sure there's other teams that are like that have been screwed by the schedule, too. And it's not like, oh, they deliberately did it. I'm not saying that. It's
almost
just like
they need the bye week after the 49ers game. It's like, okay, we played 11 games in 3 days. We played 3 games in 11 days, and now we need an extra week of rest. I mean, that's a lot.
That would make sense.
At least they're not having to travel to New York, because then that would really be like, okay, they're really screwed on this.
Yeah.
So at least
we know Mike McDonald is not used to travel.
yeah, it's
for sure. It was funny. Good article that you put up. That was cool.
I saw that from Greg Bell. I saw. I was like, what is
like Greg Bell's work?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I guess it was a question asked to McDonald of the media. It wasn't like an exclusive or anything like that. But it was when I was writing the article, I was just thinking, why is he having to be involved in that at all? They should have a team of logistics. Surely they do. I mean, it's not the coach is making travel plans, but they do have a team of logistics.
They used to call him the travel secretary back in the old days.
Yeah, but you think John Schneider would be saying, you know what, we need to leave early. I mean, McDonald doesn't need to be worried about it. Or Leslie Frazier being like, okay, guys, you're fucking up. You know, you need to just fix this. And my job is to advise the head coach, and I've been around for a while, so why are we leaving at this time? I mean, you know, that kind of stuff. But it was just funny McDonald asked his players. I'm sure they were like, we need to leave earlier. And then they had the issue. I didn't add this to the article, but they tried to do that with Detroit, and there was a plane issue, so they didn't leave for 2 hours, so they ended up getting late. But, yeah, I don't know. It's at least right. At least they don't have to worry about travel this week. It's a weird season. Anyway, so that's our show for today. We've taken up enough of your time with the politics and adding the Seahawks talk in there. So we hope that you have a wonderful weekend and that you watch a lot of the new Frasier, which I think. Let me ask you this. Is the Frasier new? Is it new? Did they bring it back again?
They brought it back again. Have you watched it? I haven't watched it.
I have not, but I thought, didn't they bring it back a couple of years ago? Did that stop and then they brought it back again?
I don't think they brought it back a couple of years ago. I think there were rumors, or maybe it was just advance notice, much like the advance notice that Leonard Williams will be back for the Giants game.
Nice. No, it was
I haven't watched it.
I've heard
Have you watched the new Matlock? starring Kathy Bates.
Kathy Bates? I have not. She's lost a lot of weight. She looks almost too thin.
Kathy Bates is still a magnificent actor, by the way.
Let me interject real fast. The reason I doubt myself as a writer sometimes is because I should have the kind of fan and like that Kathy Bates was in Misery. I want to be that. I want to be that guy. I want to be James Caan.
Do you want to be James Caan?
Yeah, because, you know, I want to be that guy.
Okay, I can bring up a block of wood next time I come down.
You don't count. You're a fellow, you're not a fan. I want to be that good. I want to be like, I want to be Reindeer Games. You know, I want to be, I want to be that kind of writer.
Did you enjoy Reindeer Games?
I haven't seen it. Leslie told me about it and watched it and said, did you enjoy the ending? And she was like, meh. she thought the show was great, but she was like, saying you enjoy the ending is a little bit. It's like, okay, now I really want to see it.
Not like Lost. Reindeer Games is good, but I can't recommend the new Matlock, even though I missed the big twist at the end, because I.
She's a woman.
The other actors were not very good. I don't know if because they're not good actors or the direction was poor, but it was.
It's all misleading, right? It's not really Matlock. It's just Andy Griffith is there in the end. He's like a face in the crowd.
That'd be so awesome. Oh, my God. I should watch that movie again. I love that movie.
I just rented it on Prime. I haven't seen it yet. I mean, I haven't re-seen it.
Nah.
I remember, this is for those who knew us 1,000 years ago. Remember how Sheila had that poster of Face in the Crowd?
Yes.
It's just like.
Yes.
That was a weird house. That was the only haunted house I feel like I've ever been a part of. So that was the plan, I think, was haunted. Well, in the show with some, so there was that one time. So I had the flu, right? And I'm in the living room and I'm watching TV and the kitchen light is on, and her turn on and turn off switches are like the really hard ones. Like they like clink and you have to turn off. So I'm like,
smack them. You gotta smack them.
So I'm in watching TV and then the light in the kitchen goes off. I heard it click and it go off and I'm like, yeah, I won't be going in the kitchen for a while. And I don't believe in ghosts, right, or anything like that, but I thought that's weird. And then I think that same week, like I went into the bathroom, which was at the back of the house, just me in the house, in the back of the house, and the faucet on the, like I had gone into the bathroom previously and the water was off and I went in and the water's just perfectly on, and I was like, I'm just gonna turn this off. It was weird. Didn't help to have all the dead baby photos everywhere, but
that wouldn't help either. Shout out to Ray Parker Jr.
Well, okay, Ray, if you're listening, go Hawks.
Why are you the worst?
All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be.
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.